name is Ted. I was born in Malden at 18 The Hythe was the address. It's just opposite the Queen's Head, down North Street.
And can I ask what year you were born?
1936.
Which makes you?
85 in September.
Yes. Yeah. So Ted, your father, I believe, was a fisherman.
He was, yes.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, he was one of the three brothers, and they all shared the same boat, which was the MN9, based in Malden. And their basic duties were going out catching flatfish or whatever fish they could catch, oysters and winkles and shellfish in general, you know.
And did they go out every day?
More or less every day, yeah. Depending on the tides, of course.
And what about selling the fish afterwards when they came back?
Well, the winkles were always put in a big drum as soon as they got back and scoured, a great big oil drum, and scoured to get all the barnacles off. And then they were put into sacks, and we either sold them on the beach, or I used to go around selling them on a Sunday to regular customers, mostly across the Downs and in Victoria Road.
Did you have brothers and sisters to help you?
Normally, yeah. Me and my younger brother used to do it. But my older brother, being 3 years older, you know, sometimes he got involved, sometimes it didn't. It depends. I used to enjoy doing that.
So the fish was sold, you say, on the beach?
On the beach, yeah. They were sold from fishing trunks.
Fishing trunks?
Fishing trunks, yeah. It's like a wooden... In actual, it's like a little wooden boat with holes in it, and it's covered in the top with a removable lid, and it's kept in the water with the fish alive in it. And when we washed all the beaches down normally before we sold the fish, so that people could walk down and have a look at them, we pulled the trunk in, opened it up, and they could see what the fish were inside there, and they could tell you if they wanted to sell or just leave it up to us, pick out which ones they were. Which we did, and we put them on a wire.
Ah.
We threaded them through the gills and on a wire. Still alive they were, you know. And people went off, and I think a big flounder in those days would cost about sixpence, which was 2.5p now, isn't it? And so, I mean, that's how things have changed.
Do you remember what other fish were caught, apart from flounders?
Well, that was flounders place. The old place, dabs, which are the small ones.
Yeah.
Flatfish. Occasionally we'd get a sole. The skate we only went after on occasions because they weren't as frequent in the rivers as what the other fish were, you know.
And do you know if your father had to go out some distance to catch, or was it all in the estuary?
It's all in the estuary. Oh yeah, they're on the inshore boats. They weren't they weren't trawlers. It's we'd go down as far as Bradwell. It's normally done between Mill Beach and Osey Island. The majority of it.
Bit different today, isn't it?
All comes, yes. Yeah.
And did you go out in the boat with your father sometimes?
Oh, yes, lots of times. Did you? Yeah. Well, we were brought up, you know, it's just a way of life, you know. I wasn't the only one. All fishermen's families did.
And then when you came back, it was you and your brother mainly responsible for the selling?
No. The parents were in charge.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, the parents were in charge. They could leave us to do it. But we wouldn't go down and do it on our own. There had to be the parents there as well.
Ted, I think there was a story about when you were very young about falling in the water from the boat. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I didn't actually fall in. I was knocked in. we were out fishing as a family. My mother was there, my dad, and my two brothers. And we were having a nice little tub. You're limited as to what you can do on a boat, obviously, you know, because you've got no handrails around the outside of the boat. And they usually kept a good eye on you because they had to. And we were tacking, what they call tacking, which was going across the river and coming back again. And the boom swings backwards and forwards. And I got up, apparently, stood on the side of the boat as the boom came over, and that knocked me in the water. And my dad, because he got all his fishing gear on with thigh boots and one thing, they couldn't dive in after me. So he had to turn the boat round, and apparently they fished me, got me out with a fishing a hook. But this is only, you know, this is only what I've been told by my parents, you know. So I assume that it's true.
So you were pretty young.
I must have been about a year, 18 months, something like that.
Just a toddler.
Yeah. I was in nappies, apparently.
Yeah. So does that mean that you've never been frightened of water?
Never, ever been frightened of water. I've had some scary incidents when I've been out swimming, but no, I've never been afraid. I mean, there was an incident once when I was swimming and I got cramp in both legs. And I was swimming with my friends, obviously. And I had the presence of mind of turning over right on my back. My legs were up under my chin nearly. And they just got hold of me and dragged me back to shore. But I think I most probably would have survived anyway because I float and I didn't know. But the pain with cramp, as you know, is we'd been playing football before and that was the cause of it.
So I guess with that love of the water, you enjoy swimming in the prom?
Oh, yeah, we love swimming. We're always in the water, especially in the lake.
Yeah. And were you in any swimming teams or anything like that?
We used to have swimming races, which was in the lake. They used to have a men's end and a ladies' end. Oh. And there was two rafts, and the swimming we used to races from one raft to the other, and or shorter races even, you know, and diving. Not competitions, but we used to show off on the diving board, you know. And yes, you know, we all learned to swim in the lake. Everybody in Morden, I think, learned to swim in the lake that could swim.
And there was a lot of freedom, wasn't there?
Oh, there was,
probably
yeah.
More so than today.
And I can't ever remember anybody getting into trouble.
And I think you've mentioned water polo.
Yeah, Morden, we did have a water polo team. It wasn't purely a league team. We played other people from other places like Haybridge and we had good fun at that, you know, but it was just purely for fun, that was.
And you were quite a sporty youngster, I imagine.
Oh, I've always been involved in sports of all sorts. I've always been very competitive too.
And in the football team?
I was in the football. I played for Morden and Haybridge and Sads when they had a team.
Okay, so going back to the river, can you tell me how you caught dabs as a youngster?
We used to get a pocket money like that. We had what they call a pass net, which was a long flowing net of about a foot diameter.
Say that again.
Pass net, P-A-S-S, pass. Oh boy, I don't know, I couldn't tell you. And that you used to tie that to your belt or tie it around your waist and that would come behind you. And you could go along the, when the tide was right, you could only go what we call grubbing for fish, flatfish, when the tide came in. So you'd start off at a very low tide, not far from where our boat was, and you'd walk slowly, stir the mud up, so it's going ahead of you, start all dark ahead of you, and we'd go towards Sads Wharf, and that's as far as we could get. By that time, the tide had risen too much, so it was too deep to do it. And you used to go along with your hands spread, feel the fish, press them into the mud, pick them up and put them in your pass net.
Right.
And we used to get our pocket money like that, you know, and sell the fish and...
So you caught them with your hands?
Caught them in the hands.
Because you felt them under the mud?
Felt as they were coming up with you. You know, they're all around you. You move all around, you're feeling the mud and what was going by. You get crabs and everything else in there, you know. But, it's just a way of life, I suppose. We took to it naturally. We weren't taught to do it. We just went out and did it.
And then you brought them back and sold them?
Sold them, yeah.
Or took some home for your tea?
If we couldn't sell them, we only sold them to the neighbours and things like that if they wanted them. Most of the time, I suppose, we gave them away, you know. But.
And if you had them at home, they were just fried, presumably?
Yeah, we
fried.
Always fried them, yeah.
Good. You mentioned as well pleasure boats and rowing boats?
There was in those days there was forget the people's names now, but they had a big rolling ramp that you could lower down into the water at a certain height. The boats would pull up alongside of it, passengers would get on, and off you'd go. And there was the Viking, the...
Nelson, you mentioned?
There was three of them.
Yeah.
And we used to take them down as far as Mill Beach and then come back again.
Right. And did you help out on those boats?
I went out on quite a bit. As I got older, you know, I got to know the men. They knew me. They knew my father. We all knew each other anyway. Mm. And I was quite competent. I used to guide a boat in and to bring it back up again. And collect the money. And not always, just on occasions, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, similar today, I suppose, visitors to Malden would take one of these boats, take a trip on one of these boats.
That's right, yeah. There was also rowboats as well.
And you were involved in the rowboats?
In the rowboats, in not so much get rid of them, but I used to go and collect them when people dumped them somewhere, you know.
They dumped their boats?
They'd row up to Beely and enjoy, have a good row. I suppose they got a bit tired. They come back as far as Sadge Wharf or somewhere like that, the bridge at Fullbridge. Get out, leave the boat there, and we had to go and collect them.
Oh. So how did you collect them? Did you...
We rowed up with one boat. Yeah. We could tow as much as three or four boats back, you know. Mm. Obviously, the tide would be going down. You wouldn't be able to do it against the tide. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
And rowing was quite a popular pastime, was it?
It wasn't a pastime. It was a necessity, really, you know.
For visitors, yeah. They would hire a boat.
And... Oh, yes, they would, yeah. But... there was never any life jackets, no safety precautions or anything in those days, you know. They just. But I can't ever remember anybody, apart from dumping the boats, you know, ever getting into trouble.
Ted, I know you were only quite a young boy when it was wartime, but mm-hmm. What do you remember about the war?
Well, I've got quite vivid memories, really, you know, because, as I say, Malden was quite a close community. We all knew each other where we lived. The siren used to go in the high street and warn everybody, and the ARP wardens used to come round and make sure all the lights were out. And when you look down the river, they always seemed to come up from the river, from Germany, obviously. That used to be a direct route to London, apparently. And you could see the lights, the searchlights would go on, and you could see the balloons. Where they were positioned, I don't know, you know, but you could see them in the sky. And we often see the doodle boats come over with their glowing tail lights, you know. I think the adults were more frightened of the war than what we were. That didn't mean that wasn't quite so bad to us.
I was going to ask you if it was frightening, but maybe it was a little bit exciting as well.
I think it was a nuisance more than anything. I don't think we ever had any. We were very lucky where we were, you know. I mean, you look at London and the people, the trouble they had. I mean, we had one doodlebug. We had one doodlebug land on near Osey Island, and I think there was one landed just the other side of Malden somewhere. I don't know where exactly. But that's as much as we saw at the war. You know, we used to have dogfights with the RAF. Spitfires and one thing and another. So, and we've had German planes shot down, and I remember going to see when a plane was shot down, which was quite comical, really, looking back on it now. The German landed in what we used to call Primrose Meadow, which is down the bottom of Park Drive. Of course, we all tore off down there, and there was this German there sitting on the grass as calm as you like, you know? So we were all waited there, and presently the local policeman came down on his bike. he took him off up to the police station that was it, you know.
You said there was a siren in the high street.
In the high street, that was at the fire station, which used to be in London Road.
Right, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And that siren covered the whole
town. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about shelters?
We had air raid shelters. But there was one along the Downs, which is just off of North Street. And I think there was two on the quay, Malden Quay. And that would cover everybody, you know, really.
And yeah. Did you use those? Did you go?
No. very frequently.
What did you do as a family?
Well, rather than that, the people that lived alongside, I all got gathered in the passage or stayed in the houses, you know.
In the cottages?
Yeah.
On the high?
We always got in the passage because we were next door to the passage.
Yeah, quite. You mentioned North Street and the Downs, which makes me think of Dagger Lane,
yes.
Just around the corner from where you were.
Yeah, that's right.
I think you've heard a story
about
the name Dagger Lane.
Well, a lot of the people that were old, several of the people that are older than me, we often spoke about it, and we just referred to it as Dagger Lane, but I suddenly thought, I'll try and find out how it got its name. And I got hold of my cousin, actually, who is quite a few years older than me, and we sat and talking about it. So I said, well, as far as I know, he said, Malden used to be quite busy with boats coming up and mooring and one thing and another, close to where, as you go down to North Street, you carry straight on past don't turn down to go down towards the quay, but you carry straight on. And down the bottom there used to be a big shed, apparently, which people used to play cards in and sit and have beer in there, I think, sort of thing, you know. And apparently one day they were playing cards and it got out of hand. Somebody was accused of cheating and somebody got a knife out and it was obviously threatened. They called the police. And I think that is how it's got its name, as Dagger Lane. I don't know that it's fact, but that seems feasible to me.
It's quite a possible story,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, quite. Mm. When you left school, what was your first job? What did you do?
Apart from paper rounds while I was at school, I started as an apprentice at SADS. To get an apprenticeship in Malden in those days, you were very, very lucky. It was either SADS or Bentalls. I was lucky enough that my brother, who went to the grammar school, 3 years ahead of me, started at SADS, and he'd done very well down there. He got an apprenticeship. So when I went, he got me an interview to go down there, and I had the interview with the works manager, and I started work down at SADS, you know, and it led to an apprenticeship, which is a 5-year apprenticeship until I was 21. And it was a very, very good apprenticeship. There was no schooling in those days. It was all practical experience.
You learned on the job.
On the job.
What sort of things did you learn there?
General joinery, you know, we did everything. We did joinery for all over the world. I mean, I remember working on a church porch in teak wood that went to Southern Rhodesia, and I didn't actually machine it, but I assisted in it, you know, and we did the Woomera rocket range in Australia. Yeah, we sent stuff there. All over the world. We were most probably the biggest joinery firm in the country.
Really?
Yeah. Because we dealt in hardwoods, our importers as well. We imported hardwoods.
The timber would come up on the barges?
On the bar. They had a big we used to call them steam boats, come up more at Habish Basin. And the lighters used to go from Malden down, unload the boats down there and bring them back to Malden again.
Right, and more up outside SADS.
Yeah, outside SADS, and that was usually all hand-lifted off.
Really?
Yeah.
And then I believe you did your national service?
I did my national service when I was 21 in the RAF. I was lucky to get in the RAF. I wanted to get in the Navy, but I couldn't. It's coming towards the end of the National Service period, you know. And I was lucky to get in the RAF, and I had 2 very good years. I enjoyed my 2 years.
And then you came back to SADS?
I came back to SADS after that, yes.
Yeah.
And I stayed with them until they sold out to Bolton and Paul, and that just wasn't the same firm after that, you know.
So you left and...
I left and
worked elsewhere.
All sorts elsewhere, yeah. Mm. So
can we go back to, you know, when you were a boy? What do you remember about the High Street?
Oh, the High Street. Not a lot. We never very rarely went. The only time we ever went up past the clock was when the hunt was on in the winter. Wow. We did all our shopping down at the bottom end of this area. So little shops down there, you know, butchers and fish shop and fish and chips. And we no need to go up to the top of the town.
Yeah.
We did occasionally, I suppose. But
I think you said there was more than one fishmonger.
I can't remember the names. Wright was one of them. They're all local people, but I can't remember. As far as I can remember, there was one at the top end of the town. I can't have to remember where, but I remember there being one close to the town clock. I remember that. Mm. And there was one down the lower street where Bull's Fish Shop was, you know, opposite the Once Road entrance.
Yeah. And so you carried on your interest in sport, and you know, in your later life, you've been doing lots of sporty things.
I've always been involved in sport. I did in the RAF, you know, I did very well in the RAF with athletics so much, but cross country running and this sort of, and I was in boxing, and I made the boxing team while I was in there. Doesn't matter what I went in for, I came off. I went on the rifle range and I became a marksman. I won our station mile the 2 years I was in the RAF, which was quite a feat. I got involved in everything I could. I just kept myself fit and running. And the boxing was the best thing I ever got involved with. I don't think I've ever been fitter in my life. We had a professional light heavyweight champion who was my... I was a corporal, and he was my assistant, you know, and we were great mates, you know. Ted Williams, his name was. He fought for the world championship at one time. But we were, you know, you wouldn't think he was any different to anybody else.
And now you're a long-term member of Malton Bowling Club.
Bowls Club, yeah.
And do you play regularly?
As often as I can. Because of my age, I have to pick my matches these days. Yeah.
And you're successful, I expect.
I have been, you know, I've had a bit of success. But
But
I've always been competitive, that's the thing, you know. I play darts, I've won trophies at darts. I run a snooker club for about 3 years, you know. Football, golf, I did very well at golf. I've enjoyed my golf about 20-odd years at Malton Golf Club. And... But I think you've got to want to do it, and you've got to be competitive.
Yeah.
I can't play just for the fun of it.
Looking back, Ted, what changes are you aware of in Malden? Let's say, start with the river. What changes have there been in the river?
Well, I'm not very often... see much of the river these days, you know, but originally, you know, the river channels used to be marked out with buoys. You've got a buoy on the right hand side and a buoy on the left hand side, and the channels between those two buoys, and I could go down with my eyes shut, you know, but they've all changed now. The mudflats have changed, and we used to go what they call after eels, going up towards Bealey Abbey with what we call babbin, with a bunch of worms on a pole. And but now that's totally different. It's all shingle now, where it used to be mud flats. It's nearly all shingle, you know. It's changed considerably, like everywhere else, I suppose, you know. My father could actually remember standing on the quay, and he could throw a stone across the river, and it's 4, 5, 6 times wider than that now. Yeah, I mean, we used to wander all over the mudflats and the marshes on the other side, and you could walk normally from once you got out of the boat, you could walk the sea wall, but you can't now.
And you mentioned there was a sandy beach.
There was a little sandy beach, yeah. It's the only one I know of, I can recall, what they call Paddle Dock. That's... as you get onto the extension, if you row from where my father's boat was, downstream a little bit, and then go over towards Hobish Basin, there was like a little bay that was, it got sand on it, and you could sunbathe, and it was quite a pleasant little beach. You couldn't do it once the tide had gone out, mind you. It had to be a high tide.
But it was real sand.
That was real proper sand, yeah.
And it's not there now.
Not that I know of.
What are your favourite memories, looking back, when you were young?
Well, looking back, I suppose, is the people I knew, you knew who your friends were. Well, we were all mucked in together. There was no... nobody was better than anybody else, you know. We weren't a well-off fraternity down there. They were all hard-working people. And that's the main thing. Things have changed. People aren't so friendly as they used to be. Not to my way of thinking, anyway. If you made a friend down there, you've got a friend for life. And I've still got friends now, thank God. One or two of them are still alive, you know, and we still speak and we still reminisce. But Malden has changed. They got rid of the lake, which I think was a travesty. That was a big part of Malden.
Yeah.
People used to come for miles and miles just to swim in the lake, and now carnivals have all gone.
You mentioned carnivals.
Yeah.
Do you remember going to the carnivals?
Oh, crumbs, yes. Yeah. Every year we look forward to it, you know.
Yeah.
We had a big carnival procession, massive fairground, and a regatta, swim competitions on the lake, fireworks in the evening, you know.
And that went on for a week, was it?
The carnival was for a week, yeah.
So it was a real fun week then, wasn't it?
Yeah, the fair lasted there, stayed there a long while, quite a long while after that, you know. But everybody was relaxed. They had great big raffles, you know. People donated to, all the shops donated for the raffles, massive raffles.
Apart from his fishing, my dad was also a wildfowler.
Wildfowler, yeah.
Shooting wild ducks and things like that, you know, mainly for food and whatever, and punt guns. He had a punt gun as well. Punt gun.
What's that?
It's a big barreled gun, like an ordinary little punt, and you lay it in the punt, and you lay down in it, and you line it up where the birds are, and it's filled with... all sorts of, in those days you couldn't get lead shot, but it's filled with all sorts of things, old screws, everything, like small things you could get. Just put it in a load of wadding, ram it down the barrel of the gun, put the charge on the, and you had to lay down there. If you stood up, you'd fall overboard. But you just line it up where the ducks were, pull the trigger, and it had a great big boom, you know, and then you just come pick the birds up. Some of them were mashed about a bit, but he was also very friendly with an ornithologist called J. Wentworth Day. He's an author. He's written several books on wildfowling, and he had a farm in Ingatestone. He's a great friend of my dad's, and we got to know him very, very well.
The wildfowl were shot for food, basically.
For food, oh yes, nothing for sport.
No,
just
for
basically
food.
For food. Yeah, we used to walk miles, you know. But my dad would never ever shoot a bird that was sitting down. He'd always put them up so they got a fair chance of getting away.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, he'd never ever shoot a stationary bird. No. Which I now admire, you know, really. It's he'd always put on. He taught me how to fire, shoot, and one thing and another, you know. And I can remember we had a dog. We tried to train a dog from this J. Wentworth Day. He said, "Come take it, cover, come over and pick whichever one you want." We went over to Angustown, brought this dog back. We taught it to retrieve with a sock. We just go and hide the sock up, old stuff sock. Hide the sock up somewhere, get the retriever, bring it back, sit at your feet, give her its paw. Perfect, absolutely perfect. So it came the day when we took him down the sea wall, and I'd got the gun, and he said to me, "Fetch one of those seagulls down, Ted." So I shot this seagull, looked round for the dog, couldn't see him anywhere. He didn't stop running until he got home. He could never ever stand the sound of a gun. Brilliant dog, do everything, but he couldn't stand the sound of a gun.
Oh dear.
But we used to catch get all sorts of birds, you know. And that was up and down the river. We used to go for with a punt gun. That's about that. And then we got Crawshay's Mamgoo. Mr. Crawshay? No,
I haven't heard of him.
No.
Say the name again, Mr.
Crawshay.
Crawshay,
yeah.
An unusual name.
Yeah, it was, yes. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't a local originally,
yeah,
you know.
Who was he? Yeah, what did he do?
I don't know what he did. You know, to me, he was just a very interesting man. He'd got this workshop that we got involved with, and he'd made a model of a big clock, and we used to put pennies in it and it'd play you a tune, you know. And we looked around his workshop, and there's all sorts of things in there that he's working on. Mm-hmm. But I don't actually know what his trade was or what he did.
So he was a bit of an inventor, was he?
I would think so, yes. Mm. But not for commercial reasons, you know, just small inventions like. Mm. But he also had a big three-wheel bike.
Where was the workshop?
As you go down the Hythe, past the Queen's Head, you come to the entrance to the quay. And this was the first boat on the quay.
It was a boat?
A boat, a big barge, like a barge boat. It wasn't a barge, it was a converted barge. Yeah. And it was called the Mamgoo.
Right.
At one time we had two or three MTBs moored down at Cook's boatyard.
Say it again?
MTBs, motor torpedo boats.
Ah.
They came up there after the war for training purposes, I think, with the cadets and one thing or another. Mm. And they stayed, I imagine, about a couple of years or something like that before they disappeared. Mm. Also, we used to go eel babbing. It was an art that we were taught, and all it consists of is a broom handle or a cane with a length of string on it, a lead weight on the end, and that was it. All the lugs were on this beach just off of Northey Island. We used to row down there, dig up the lugworm till we've just got enough. And my dad used to thread them with a needle on a piece of wool and make a bunch of worms, put them in a sack, and then we start going up towards Morden with a pole, this lead weight. You tie the worms on the end of the lead weight. And as the tide came in, you'd put your bab over the side of the boat and you'd feel the eel wriggle, and you'd just lift it into the boat. And you kept doing that all the way up. And we used to get quite a few eels like that, you know.
And what did you do with the eels?
Well, you either sold them or ate them, you know. Mm. Lovely eels. My mum used to make some lovely eel stews and, yeah. But that was good sport too, good fun.
Yeah.
I remember I took my wife up one day she's my girlfriend at the time, and she hadn't quite got the knack of doing it. And my young brother was with us as well, and my wife sat, because you have to sit one in the middle, one at one each end. My wife was in the middle and my younger brother was at the other end, and I was down this end. My wife was facing her younger brother. She got a bite, pulled the worms up, and I smacked my younger brother right in the face.
Oh,
he's got all bloody worms all down his face. You know, it was quite a laugh, you know, but it's good. That was good fun. We really enjoyed it. Mm. And it could last as long as the tide lasted, you know. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. I think you mentioned mushrooms.
Oh, the mushroom field, yeah. The mushroom field was just down that where the extension was. So you've got the valley and the fields that go off on the other side of the valley, going down towards Osey Island that way, was a massive big field. It's all been covered over with, they use it as a dump there after that, you know. Massive field, loads and loads of mushrooms in it. You could pick them all day, you know. Mm. And we used to get basketfuls. And we used to give some away if we got too many, you know. Invariably, Mum used to make mushroom, what do I call it, mushroom ketchup for Sunday dinners and this sort of thing. And that was quite good. You know.
So you went down quite early to pick them.
We used to pick them early in the morning. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. I'm not sure I understand exactly where it was. Is it now...
I haven't been down there for ages. You come to the end of the end of the lake.
Yeah.
Then you've got the extension, haven't you? Mm. And to the right of the extension, you've got the valley, what we call the valley. Mm. And there used to be a miniature railway down there. Did you know that?
Yeah.
No, there used to be a miniature railway. The other side of that, you've got a great big field that went down towards Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. And we didn't go all over the field, but we just could bring where we could find the mushrooms, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we also had the targets down there for the
Territorial Army.
Yeah. And we used to go. They used to go down and fire. And after they'd been down there, we used to go down and get the dead bullets and put them on the end of our arrows for bows and arrows. Yeah.
So it was mushrooms and targets in the same field.
Yeah. The targets were over by the sea wall.
Ted, you're going to tell us a little bit more of the details of eel babbing.
Well, eel babbing, as far as we were concerned when we were children, was handed down from father to son. I can't really recall anybody else but our family going eel babbing. It's a very simple thing to do. You know, all you need is a stiff pole, some string, and a lead weight, and the worms. What we would do, we would get all those things and with a fork and put them in a boat and go down to Northern Ireland, which is the only place that I knew of where you could get the lugworms in any quantity.
The lugworms?
Lugworms, yeah.
Right, they were a favourite of eels, presumably.
That's some people use ragworm, but that lugworm you could thread onto a string, you know. Mm-hmm. Ragworm for hook bait. But anyway, when we got down to Northern Ireland, you could always see where the eels were because the worms were because of the casts in sandy mud, you know. Anyway, we dug up what we wanted and we put them in a little bag. When we got enough, we went back to the boat and we just slowly went up to where we wanted to go fishing. We had to go slowly because we did not want to overtake the tide. You can only do it at a certain depth, which was normally, we might stop once or twice on the way up to Maldon, but the depth of the water there was so much different to what it was in Maldon. So eventually we'd finish up the other side of Fullbridge going towards Beely, which is where we all caught most of our eels. And you start off in about 18 inches or 2 inches of water with the worms tied onto the end of your bab. Drop the pole over the side of the water until you feel the bottom. And then because of the worms, you lift it up. You learn how to do it and you know what to do it. So that the worms are just off the bottom. And as the eels start to swim under the boat, you feel a wriggle on the worms. And you gently lift it. You don't snatch it, otherwise the eels will drop off. You just gently lift it. It's something that you get used to. Just lift them into the boat, shake them off in the boat, and start again. And we'd carry on there until the water got too deep, which would have been about... You couldn't do in much more than 5 foot of water. That was about the maximum, I would have said, because you've got so far to lift them out, you see. And once we caught the eels, we just took them back to where the boat was moored, and we had a special trunk there, put them in there to keep them alive, and used them as and when we wanted them.
On a good day, how many would you catch?
On a good day, sometimes there's two or three of us in the boat. If it was just the two of us, you might catch 50 to 100, something
really?
Like that.
Really? That many?
Yeah, on a good day.
And how many would it take to make a good eel pie?
We never had pies. We had eel stew.
Stew, sorry.
Eel stew. Mm-hmm. Mum would make. I would say 20 or 30 for family of four.
And you all enjoyed it?
Oh, yes, we loved it, yeah.
Good taste.
I think there was a theory that eels were very healthy for you too.
And obviously they had to be skinned first.
Yeah.
Did you all do that?
We did that. We all got involved in that. It was, there again, it was an art, you know, to get the skin off in all in one pool. It's a bit mucky, but I don't think these days in the eel pie shops they do skin them, but an eel is far tastier without the skin on.
Without the skin, yeah, So you carried them back to your home, and your mum was very pleased to have them for supper.
For stew, yeah. It was normally a Sunday meal, you know, in those days,
And were there many other families that went out eel babbing?
Not that I know of. I mean, I think if there had have been, I would have come across them, you know, either with digging up the worms, because I don't know of anywhere else where there was the worms, where the worms could be obtained, and also the area that we babbed in. Mm. I don't think I ever saw anybody else doing it.
No. I wonder why it was called eel babbing.
If you look on the internet, they'll explain it to you.
Oh, right.
it's just a name that's been handed down, I think, you know. When you're eel babbing, you're controlled by the time. And as we started off down at Heybridge Basin, we didn't want to get to Malden too early, you know, because there wouldn't have been enough water to get over the shallow water before you got to Fullbridge. And then once you got over to Fullbridge, you'd find the spot that you wanted to start your eel babbing, which was one we normally use, you know, because we knew how what the depth was, and we would normally start with about 15 or 16 inches of water, and we had to time it from Mill Beach so that we weren't there too early or we weren't there too late. It comes with experience, you know. But once we were there, the water would gradually rise, and you'd gradually undo your pole so you've got more string out. Drop it and as the water kept rising and rising and rising, sometimes we moved upstream 40 or 50 yards, you know, because the water sometimes is a sort of a hollow, and you get to know the river. And we just carried on until the water got too high, and we just packed up.
And did you do this throughout the year, or was it just
summer?
Oh,
no, it was just the summer. It's like all eels, you know, whether they're in freshwater eels or they always feed better in the summer. Mm-hmm. Anglers were told that. Mm-hmm. My father and us, we used to go petering, which is mainly after flatfish.
Can you
but sometimes
that again?
You caught
petering. How did it get that name?
From St. Peter, I think. It's something that's been handed down over the years. I didn't know. I know what petering was, you know, but I think the reason was that St. Peter, being a disciple, was a fisherman as well, and I think that's how it originated.
So what did it entail?
Entailed taking your boat with all the nets down to... We normally started off around about the Osey Island area at low tide. And my dad would row and set the net with a buoy one end and a buoy the other end with anchors on. And then once the net had settled, we could row up downstream about 40, 50 yards. And he'd get out of what we called a rugging pole, which was about 15, 20 foot long, with a big bar on the... spike on the bottom of it, and he would go backwards and forwards across the side of the net, in front of the net, splashing the fish into the net. And then once we reach the buoys, pull it in, and as you come in, you empty the fish into the boat, in the bottom of the boat, and start again further up, you know. Because you'd only go with the tide.
And you often got a good catch that way?
Oh, yes, yeah. You have it, like, there again, it's good or bad days, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many people did it take to do that?
One. He could do it on his own.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I certainly haven't heard that word before, petering.
Petering, no.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know what else to call it, you know.